Welcome into Gun Talk Hunt.
It's
America's favorite hunting podcast.
It is since
June of this year. Today's Gun Talk Hunt is brought to you by Timney Triggers, the world's finest triggers. Timney has been making quality triggers in the U.S. American made now, 1946. So we were actually out at the range today using some Timney triggers.
Yes.
I had the Timney AR trigger. It's a single stage, 3 pound, broke clean. And it was kind of funny because I hadn't shot that gun in a while and we're trying to be super accurate in this particular application. And man, it's nice.
It is
real nice.
And I was shooting one out of the Ruger precision rifle.
Yeah. Ruger precision.
6.5 Creedmoor.
Yep.
Oh my gosh, that Timney breaks nice.
Yeah. You guys know Timney. We talk about them all the time, but it's one of the things that can help you be a better shooter. And also, it's really easy to install. I know some people, it's like, oh God, I don't know, I'm putting a trigger. It makes me nervous, but yep.
I'm not a gunsmith.
It's not.
Neither hard. Am I. Yeah. And I switch out every one of my triggers. It doesn't matter what it is.
I don't play one on TV. I didn't even stay in a Holiday Inn Express last night. So we got one of our good friends from the industry. Paul Pluff is on the show today.
Yes. I've been waiting for this one.
Paul basically raised myself and KJ.
Yes.
You know, from young lads in the industry. So, Paul, welcome in, man.
Appreciate that. And listen, when I first started dealing with you guys, I did have hair.
Yeah. Well, you hear that all the time, actually.
Yeah, we do.
Paul's one of the pros in the industry, PR and marketing for Ruger. You guys may have heard of Ruger.
Yeah. Kind of a big deal.
Kind of a big deal. Yeah. So, Paul, man, I don't even know where to start with Paul.
I mean,
goodness gracious,
man. Well, let's just say this. He's hunted all over the world. It doesn't matter if it's a pistol, if it's a rifle. It's as long as he's got it in his hands, he's deadly.
Yeah. So, Paul, you were just telling us about the mule deer you just got back.
Yeah, I did. I mean, it's today I got my delivery of a mule deer I shot last year in Colorado. Really nice mule deer. Probably the biggest mule deer I've taken so far.
Really?
But I had to work. Oh, yeah. Yeah, it was an excellent trip. I had some riders with me, and we were out there. It's actually the Spur Ranch out in Colorado. KJ is very familiar with Spur Ranch folks. They're just great people. They put on some great hunts. But we glassed and glassed and spotted this big boy, and I did a creep up on him and got about within 125 yards of him, which, you know, utilizing a 6.5 PRC that we were doing out of the Ruger American, that's a chip shot.
Yeah.
And so I get down in a prone position just to discover that I wasn't paying attention where I was laying and laid down into a bed of cactus.
Oh, that's a surprise. And how did the deer respond when you went, yeah?
That's the best part. I lay down instantly know it, but I would already, as soon as I went down, I had my cheek on the buttstock and my eyes lasered through the scope, and I could still see him standing in there, and I just gritted my teeth, screamed internally, but I was going to still take the shot. And just as I was starting to squeeze the trigger, it wasn't me. I didn't know if it was the wind or something spooked him. And he was sitting right on the edge or right on the rim of a fall off. And he just took 3 steps and completely disappeared.
Yeah.
I got up trying to see if I could see him, but it was such a fast fall off that he just went right down on that ridge and just followed the thing right up.
And gone.
And that's when Paul started picking the cacti out of his chest.
I didn't even shoot the deer and I laid in cactus. But you said you found him the next day. Same deer?
Yeah, same deer. We got back out only because now I was really determined. You know, I figured at this point in time, he owes me.
Absolutely.
I spent about a half hour picking, cactus out of me. So I figured, he's not getting away scot-free. I mean, that's it. I mean, he's, you know, I had to pay for this one. So
there was a score to settle.
There was a score to settle. So we spotted him. And it was kind of interesting too. I got to tell you, I mean, guys I was with was just good eyes. We're driving along the bottom edge of the mountainside, looking up the ridge. and he was actually bedded down underneath a brush. I mean, and so it was kind of interesting. So all you could see was just his horns.
Yeah.
I mean, rack. And I got a good look at the rack first day when I laid down on cactus, so we knew what we were looking for. So I thought about it. We got down there, and it was probably from where I was at up to where he was bedded. It was a little over about 225 yards, 235 yards. I mean, okay. It wasn't tremendously long, but you know, it was an uphill shot. So I just got anchored down and I go, yeah, I'm not looking for any more cactus beds. I can make the shot from here when he gets up. I'm just going to get down there and just settle in. And I kind of got down in a kneeling position, put the gun up on a bipod there and just kind of got hunkered down there, got a nice sturdy rest. And I just sat there, and it took about 15 minutes. He stood up, started to make that good nap stretch. And about the time he got the full extension, he went straight back down.
The permanent dirt nap.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It reminds me.
I got nervous because when he went down, I lost complete sight of him.
Oh, right. Yeah. Just disappeared.
Nothing, just complete lost sight of him. I went, oh, he didn't do this again.
Yeah. Gone.
Everybody would say, man, no, you hit him hard. We heard the smack. We know he's down. So we hiked all the way up there. And where he was bedded down, it must have been a place he went to every day because he actually had a ditch hollowed out underneath this bush.
Yeah, really?
He would lay down in there. So it was hard to see him. We were lucky to pick up the top of his horns.
Oh, wow.
And stood up in it and went straight back down. And when he went down, he was down inside the ditch and you just couldn't see him from where I shot him.
Oh, cool.
Thank goodness. Yeah. So have you put a tape to him yet? Or
I have not.
Guessed him.
I have not. I'll do that probably within the next couple of days. But he was sizable. They were pretty impressed with him. Got nice thick. He a lot of character on him. Besides, I mean, he's atypical, but he's got a lot of little
trash.
Yeah,
that's trash. Fun.
Yeah, I love it. He is the nicest mule deer that I've shot so far. So I was pretty excited about it.
That's awesome, man. That's congratulations. Yeah.
Because we've all been there before, you know, little things happen during a hunt that make hunts memorable. Mm-hmm. And the cactus is one of them that I think all of us have somewhere in our hunting stories.
Yeah.
Because I've done the same thing. Like I'll go take a kneeling shot and I won't look down before. Right. It's like the guy who sits down by a rattlesnake.
maybe I've done that perhaps.
No, you haven't.
Well, I looked first. And I checked because I was like, let me know, check for snakes. I've been doing this since I was, you know, a kid.
Yeah.
I sit down and it was about 30 seconds. And then here comes this rattlesnake just slithering by. I hop up and then my camera guys wanted to shoot it. And I think they unloaded a mag and scared the devil out of them. They never hit him.
Never hit it.
Snakes can be hard to hit, those little slithery guys. So
I've never sat down on a snake. Never sat down on
No.
one. Well, I had one crawl up on me, but I levitated. Because I was almost napping. Yeah. I was closing my eyes. It was a nice like 55 degree day on a Sunday afternoon alongside of a wheat field. And then here he comes. And I'm like, oh, it's going to be a deer. I'm going to get a shot. It was a snake. I didn't get a shot.
It gets the head popping a little bit.
Oh, my gosh. Well, I jump. I'm laying under a barbed wire fence. I'm laying under it.
Oh, really?
I never touched the fence. And I don't know how I got up. And my gun's laying right in front of me. Like, I didn't touch anything.
It was magic.
It was magic. And then I go running over, and I've got deer in the field. And I'm sitting there going, oh, my gosh, what am I going to do? Well, I got to kill the snake. And then I get this, because I didn't want to interrupt the hunt.
You didn't want to make any noise.
No, didn't want to make any noise. Because I'm gonna whack the crap out of this snake. And so I get this big like log, and I go over there. I can't find the snake.
Oh, really?
I couldn't find the snake. He was gone.
Now you're like, oh, now I don't want to sit down.
No, huh? Well, I ended up laying down right there.
Did you?
Yep, laid back. I didn't go to sleep.
He's not going to come back to the same spot twice, right, Paul?
No.
Yeah, he hopes.
So Paul has a nickname. When it comes to hunting, Tonnage.
Yes, that is right. He does have a good nickname.
So, how did the Tonnage nickname come about?
I personally think he got carried away. We'd go on these hunts, and I think one of the first ones we went on, we were down in Texas. It was a great hunt, especially bringing media folks on there, because they allow you to take three deer. I mean, one was a doe, one was a call buck, and one was a keeper buck. And so we went down there, and we set up, you know, everybody to hunt them. So I kind of cleared through all three of my deer, probably within a day and a half.
I don't even know if I'd give it a day and a half.
You just whacking, stacking.
And then we're driving along. I shot a raccoon. I shot a fox. Then they told me they had Spanish goat on the property. And I said, I'm in.
Yeah.
Really? Tell me more about this Spanish goat.
Yeah.
See, senor.
I went up and shot a Spanish goat and just had everything kind of laid out and stacked up. And it after that started becoming a habit and a pattern. So somewhere along the line, they started calling me Tonnage.
If it's in season, he's on it. Yeah. Like, I mean, it's on it. If there's a nuisance raccoon, if there's a nuisance boll weevil, he'll get them all.
We got this really large armadillo, yeah. Trophy armadillo.
Well, yeah. Lord forbid, like, you send him to Africa.
Yeah.
And I mean, he's been there a couple times.
I don't know. Yeah. And what happens is he's not allowed to go back because they need the animals to reproduce for a few years before Paul gets back to Africa.
Well, and Paul, correct me if I'm wrong, because I'm not having the drive to, like, okay, I want to go on an African hunting trip. I want to go over there. How I always, like, kind of viewed it is, like, you walk up to a McDonald's menu and you'll say, I'll take a number one, I'll take a number two. You, like, can kind of, like, pick and choose kind of the plains game or the critters that you want. Is that about right?
Well, yes and no. So you have a plan when you go over there, depending on the outfitter. And there are places you can go in there and they'll solo to a game. They'll walk you up and say, okay, so you wanted the a sable. Go down here 100 yards, stand right there, and we'll get a sable to come by you.
No.
Really? It's kind of –
But I got to tell you, I mean, I do like free ranging. The nice thing about Africa is we talk about high fence hunting in the U.S. Their idea of high fence hunting, and you got to remember that you're hunting on thousands of acres that property that the outfitters own, and they use hectares. They don't use acres. They use hectares. And what determines what we think of as a high fence is mountain ranges.
Oh, really?
South Africa. So, I mean, it's not like you're within a confine and stuff. They're free ranging.
Okay.
And I got to tell you, I've been on some very aggressive hunts down in South Africa. You go to Southeast Cape, hunting down there in the Kai River region. And we were physically climbing up mountains where you're so vertical, you're actually grabbing hold of tree branches sideways to get up top. And then you get up on top and you glass. And if you're looking for, wildebeest, you'd see a herd of wildebeest and you make a plan to kind of intersect them, you know, coming down the mountain and stuff. So there are some very aggressive hunts over there.
That's fun.
Just not sitting on, shooting them out of a truck.
Right.
A lot of stock.
I guess kind of my thought was, is they have a lot of game. Like they have so much.
They do.
But you've almost got like your bush pigs and you've got your sables and
you've
got your.
You still have to go hunt for them.
Oh,
right?
Yeah.
It's just there's a lot of critters out there.
You have to hunt.
So, Paul, you're one of the guys that I would first call to talk about handgun hunting. And you've done 100%. That in Africa, too. I mean, hunting Africa with a handgun, that's interesting. Tell us about that.
Just about all my African game has been taken with handguns. Some guys do different things for a thrill. I just love handgun hunting. So I like the extra challenge of it. And I've gotten, you name it, I've gotten it. I mean, I think the longest shot I took over in Africa with a handgun was my kudu, and that was 193 yards with a handgun.
Good gosh. And that it really is different. It's I would say it's like the traditional archery hunting of the gun world. Mm. Like that's how I would liken it to, because you do have to get a little bit closer. There's a lot more concentration that goes into it. It's difficult, but he makes it look easy. That's the problem.
Well, KJ hit it on that. That's what makes it so enjoyable or such a passion is the fact that you're not going to settle and say, okay, I see something at 300 yards, you know, dial in the scope and take it down. You know, you got to do every trick in the book, you know, to track up on there to try to get within that shooting range. In yeah. most cases, you want to be under 100 yards with a handgun. Yep. You know, 80 yards and less is ideal. It's like an archery shot. At times you do have to take a long shot, but at the end of the day, you just can't sit back and, you know, see something that can't see you and drop them in his tracks over there. If you're going right. to hunt with a handgun, you got to get up close and personal. So I mean, you got to put on your best tracking skills and hope that you got some guys with you that knows what they're doing.
Yeah.
I can honestly tell you when you go over there, the outfitters, when you tell them that you're hunting primarily the handgun, they go, oof.
No. Yeah. They're not thrilled. They're going, I'm not sure about this.
Until you take the first one down, then they're all hyped up and say, okay, what do we do next? What do we do next?
They're like, ooh, this is fun.
It's a charge. I mean, it's just, it's probably my favorite way of hunting. You know, if I have my choice, if I can handgun hunt, that's exactly what I'm going to do.
Well, I had a buddy. So I had a 460 that I was like, hey, give it a try. And he's like, oh, yeah, I really want to try it. And we had this giant wheat field. It's about a mile by mile. Like, it's massive. It's got all this shinery around it. So it's perfect for the deer to come out. And you see a lot. Like, mm-hmm. you can go on to, you know, one evening, and you'll probably see 100, 125 deer on the field. Yeah. And he takes the gun out there, and I'm with him. And he's like, well, how many rounds do you think I need? I was like, here, take them all. Like, you're going to need all. He shot it, and he was like, whoa, that's a lot of gun. But then this deer comes out. And I kid you not, it's probably one of the biggest 8 points I've ever seen. It's really? One of the biggest deers I've ever seen on that field, like by far. And gets in with 85 yards, and I'm like, take him now. Yeah. And he go, boom. The deer takes a couple steps. Boom. Takes a couple steps. Boom. And now the deer is coming at him.
Oh, my gosh.
And he goes another one. Boom. Another one. Didn't drop him. Like, he ran out and he got to the last one and click. Oh, and he goes, no. Take this gun. I don't want to see it ever again. Oh, because he just practiced a couple of shots at the range. He wasn't totally comfortable with it. And when a deer like that steps out, massive. Yeah. It was probably about 155 to 160 inch.
Oh,
point.
Wow.
Massive
and
deer.
Paul, like what you're saying, when you talk about handgun hunting what your buddy did, there's just not a lot of room for error.
No.
I mean, when you're off a little bit, I guess maybe it's a better way to put it would be it's a lot easier to make an error.
Right.
Oh, yeah. So the gun, and I'll tell you straightforward with you know, today's technology and manufacturing with the ammo that we have today, handguns are more than capable of taking shots well beyond what you would possibly think you can take. But the issue is you're dealing with a shorter barrel. Any slight movement when you get out of, you know, past 50 yards is extreme. So a slight, you know, a half inch movement, which you don't maybe not notice, or a quarter inch movement may equate into missing that deer by a foot and a half.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah.
And oh, so yeah.
I tell everybody, you know, I love handgun hunting. I encourage everybody to do handgun hunting. But also, when you do that, because it's so unforgiving, understand what your skill set is, understand what your capabilities are.
Yeah.
And my favorite thing to do, and I tell everybody, you got to go to the range with a handgun.
Absolutely.
And I said, everybody gets on a bench, they sight it in, but you got to think how you're going to hunt.
Mm-hmm.
And if you hunt off sticks, you need to get yourself off the bench and onto targets on that stick till you feel comfortable. And I have another favorite thing that's that I like to do, especially with people, and even me, if I haven't been hunting for a while, when I go to the range, I do this drill, and I get I'll get like a 10 inch or a 5 inch paper plate, or my favorite ones if I can find the 10 pans, because you know when you hit them.
Oh yeah.
And I'll different distances. And then I will start in close and start working my way out till I miss that plate. And if that plate's out at 80 yards and I can't put it within that, what we consider the kill zone, that's my
You know your limit.
That's it.
That's something that I think we get complacent with, is practicing how we're going to hunt. I think that's one big thing that a lot of guys miss. And that's like Fred Bear. He would go out and he'd just shoot one arrow.
Right.
One arrow every day. Why would he do that? Well, he does that because he only gets one shot.
There's no warm up.
No warm up.
There's no warm up when you just walk into the woods, you sit there for 4 hours, and then the deer walks out.
Yeah. No, there's no warm up.
That's, kind of his concept. There's also other things you got to consider. So unless you're setting up in a blind where you're going to be sitting down hunting with a handgun. So if you're doing a spot and stock, my other suggestion is there again, you think about the adrenaline running. You think about that. If you're doing a spot and stock, one of the things I like to do during a practice, and I know I'm going to do that, it sounds goofy, but even if I'm actually practicing out on sticks, do some jumping jacks, run in place for 2 or 3 minutes, get your heart rate up, try to get some heavy breathing. Cause you've got to learn how to, and I had the kudu I was talking about that I shot. We spotted away about 500-600 yards, and it was the, dash to dine routine where the outfitter I was with, the PH, just took off running like a banshee. And so
keep up.
I gotta be honest with you, I'm not 21 years old anymore, so those type of efforts takes a little bit out of me. So I take off running, and we're sprinting through about 400 yards, and he'll hit an opening where possibly the kudu can see you, and he just does this flying hit the ground, shimmy through, pop back up on the other side, and I'm going, oh, this is just definitely going to hurt. The first one I did took the wind right out of me.
He's doing some kind of tough mutter event with a gun on his back.
No, I'm doing this with a handgun. It's actually on my wood. Oh. It's actually put to my, cross draw type of thing. So when I hit the ground, I got the full force of that hang over my chest. It wasn't one of my finest moments. But I got back up, and the whole concept of it is when I got there, threw the guns out on the stick when a kudu was out there, and it's still 193 yards. Well, actually, it was slightly less than 193 yards when I got there. It was probably about 140 yards. And so I get on the stick. I'm like panting like crazy. I could feel my head just pounding from my heart rate going. And so I start taking deep breaths, trying to get my breathing under control and stuff. And this kudu kind of takes, not knowing that I'm there, slowly kind of walks to the right a little bit, goes up, and just continues to walk up and gets that 193 yard mark before it slightly turns.
That's when he finally turned broadside on you.
Turned broadside on me, and the PH was with me. And if you've ever been over to Africa, those guys get more animated and more energetic about you shooting something than you do. And I thought he was going to start slap me in the back of the head, ask me why. It was one of those things, because you could hear him go, shoot, shoot, shoot.
The ultimate peer pressure.
And so I finally got my breathing under control. And there again, I practice at it. So I, and I was able to make that shot. And it was a long shot for a handgun.
That's a long shot.
It's a really long shot.
I wouldn't take it. There's no way. Mm-mm. There's no way I would have taken that. It's just because I'm just not as well versed.
You're not used to having somebody screaming in your ear to shoot them.
Shoot.
Well, Ryan and I are fixing to go on an antelope hunt. He's about to get a full earful of me saying, shoot it.
I've heard stories. I don't know if we've actually shot. We've been on hunts, but not hunted together. And I've heard even his dang son. Shoot him. Shoot him now. And his son's like, Dad, can I put on my earmuffs?
Yeah. I just get so jacked up. I don't know what it is. I lose all sense of communication skills on just hey, you can take the shot whenever you feel like it. No, I'm like, shoot it. Hurry. I've
experienced KJ at his best. So he made me remember this. So we're hunting and we're using black powder rifles. And so KJ's got a camera. He's filming this thing. And I got to be, it was... wasn't the best weather. And one of the finest whitetails that either one of us has ever seen steps out.
At KJ's 40 yards.
Oh, let me get on him. Shoot him. You got to shoot him. I'm saying, KJ, I'm on it. He goes, don't really. You got to shoot him. And I get up there, get on the muzzle loader. And he's just slowly walking broadside to us.
It's 40 yards.
It was like you could throw a rock at the thing and knock it down. I get up there. I said, calm down. I got him. Pull the trigger in here. Click.
Oh, no.
Now we're talking black powder. So it's not like it's rack and shoot again. Right. It's like,
What happened?
And I don't know if it, we figured out the primer head must have got damp or something.
It was a primer issue because I was dealing with this, and I had a pair of I had a bunch of 307 Magnum primers in my bag, and I was like pulling the primers out. Use this. And so he shoves it in there, and now the deer's like, what's going on up there?
I can hear these numbskulls.
There's something in that stand.
There's the whole tree's rattling.
And he's like going like, I know I should move, but I'm kind of interested to see what happens.
There's no way these idiots could be hunting me right now.
Take the primer, hurry.
I can hear you guys.
Yeah. It's Polly and KJ up there. Like, I'm okay. But no. So thank goodness Paul is like very calm natured about this. He's always very calm under pressure, me, and like saying, shoot it, and gets the primer in, and I've got this on like video. and did I forget if that like deer moved? Like it,
yeah.
I think it finally went. No, screw this.
I'm done with this.
And he goes off before he can get a shot.
Oh my gosh.
It says I was actually bringing the muzzle loader up.
Yeah.
It turned and went about 800 miles an hour the wrong way. He goes, oh, these guys finally figured it out.
Yeah.
See ya.
No, I know the words that came out of his mouth. I still remember hearing it. The words that came out. He goes, no. That was it. It was just the word no, but it was like the deflated, like once the genuine cap, the primer kind of went just click, he just went no.
Because
I remember
going,
that now.
Paul's going, this is a dead deer.
Oh, and that deer should have been dead.
Yeah.
That is the same blind, probably the same deer. And maybe I'm the common factor in all
there's a commonality
that Skip missed his big deer.
We had just talked about this recently.
Yes, we had just talked about that with Sean Skipper over at Loophole and the whole story I did the same thing to him.
I'm starting to figure out. KJ's going, I don't know why every time I hunt with people, it goes wrong. Because he's in their ear going, shoot now. Get the trigger.
I would have been big news in Africa as a PH. That would have been great. Yeah. They would have shot everything.
You shoot now. Oh my gosh. That's hilarious.
Yeah. Oh my gosh.
That's part of the experience. That's why we do it.
It is.
Yeah.
So, but it's like, but I see it like being on this side. You talk about the PHs down there getting just as excited for someone else shooting it than you. Mm-hmm. And that's just my nature. Like, I love this so much that it's like, I want him to succeed. And I've probably put a little too much pressure on it. But that was a beautiful, beautiful whitetail.
Oh my God, he was a monster.
Yeah. That was one of those media trips where it just everything went right and all wrong at the same time.
Yeah.
Because, you know, and it wasn't any fault of the equipment. It was just, you know, a deer was just a little too far, or, you know, the hunters are just getting excited, or I'm yelling in the ear of a hunter.
It's a factor, perhaps. I
mean, we were filming it. That's a factor. So
filming
stuff.
Hunts is an added degree of difficulty.
It is. And I don't think people realize that. I mean, it just because you have to wait on your shot. I mean, 90% of the time you're not taking the easiest shot because you got to wait, make sure everything's perfect. The camera guy's set up. And so you're waiting on them to give you the green light to pull the trigger.
And so by
the time that happens, your window of opportunity is shrinking really fast.
It's the silent version of shoot 'em now.
Yeah.
Cause normally hunters, they're the ones that call the shot, right? Okay. The moment's right. I'm squeezing the trigger. This is perfect. Instead it's, are you ready? No, don't shoot him yet.
No, I can't. Not yet. He's not in that
window.
I don't
see him. No, I'm adjusting focus. And you're like, the deer's walking. The deer's walking. Oh, my God. Oh, my God.
Yeah.
It's nerve-wracking.
It is. You know, so I mean, anytime people watch those film television hunts, you know, I know a lot of whispering going on, and everybody always shows success, but it's not as easy as it looks.
It's not like that all the time, and you got to think there's editing behind the scenes that it's going down. You know, because we've had to do it with our, like with a lot of our hunts, what we show is like almost, I would say 95% natural, but there's just times when you just can't get that shot.
Yeah.
I mean, and we want to show it, but man, you know, in the end, like, you know, I want to eat.
Right. Yeah. We want to try to get the animal. So, but then there's the part that there's the other half of hunting that isn't talked about as much and shared as much is the being in camp together. Right.
Oh yeah.
And we were, as we were emailing back and forth to line you up and find a schedule that works. KJ said, you know, Paul, you should probably tell the wood chopping story, which to that I said, what's the wood chopping story? So take it away, Paul.
I'm going to let him tell this one.
This is just going back quite a few years ago. KJ and Matt Rice was one of our team members. I was coming off a very bad year for me. I'd actually lost my wife. And so these guys thought it would be a good idea to get me out of my funk, get me deep into the woods of Alaska, and go on a self-guided bear hunt. And I got to tell you, it was a wonderful trip. It's probably just what the doctor ordered to get you, you know, back into place. And so KJ says, man, I got this thing lined up. He goes, man, such a great deal.
First alarm goes off.
Yeah. I'm going, yeah, okay. So we jump on a jet boat, go up to Talkeetna River, get off this jet boat, and we're going, what was it?
I mean,
10 miles.
Yeah, it was about 7 miles inland.
Yeah, inland. And it was, let me tell you, it was not an easy hike. Not by no means. I mean, you worked to get to where we were going.
Yeah.
And so we're packing in, and there was a bunch of good stories behind this. Of course, me being the, one of the stories is me being the guy that, the older of the three gentlemen, I thought I'd kind of mess with the young boys and ask them if they brought 4 jars of peanut butter and this and that. And they go, no. And I go, oh, you guys need to decide right now which one of you two are going to give up your life when we run out of food and I have to eat.
That is true. We did.
That's how the trip started.
We ran out of food pretty quick.
Oh, jeez.
So we're hiking up in there. So KJ says, man, says, you know what? I found this guy. He says, I don't know how I came across him. I find this guy. He's got the perfect location. I said, and he's building a cabin up in there where we're going to be hunting. And he says, this is going to be perfect. We're going up there. And I said, and we're getting closer and closer to place. And I said, hey, KJ, I said, we're going to take care of this guy. We're going to stay inside his cabin instead of pitching the tents that we brought. And KJ goes, well, I don't know if they'll let us do it. I said, trust me, KJ. I have the power. I can give this. I can take care of this guy. I can give him whatever he wants. We are going to stay in his cabin. I said, I'm telling you right now. I said, we're roughing it, but we're not going to be roughing it that hard. So we come around the corner. We cut in there, and you can see some logs sitting in there.
We're
and
like,
there was what is the start of a cabin. Had no floor, no roof. And about only half the walls up, and I looked at KJ and go, okay, he's not getting whatever he wants.
Yeah, never mind on that.
That was pretty much it.
Paul's thinking, I could barter for guns and all this. Like,
well, I would have done it.
He's got a partial cabin. I'll give you a partial gun.
Yeah.
How about that?
we did pitch tents, which was kind of interesting because these guys are watching me. And so we're in the middle of bear country. We heard some very strange noises.
Oh, gosh. Some unbelievable noises. There.
We're pitching tents. I'm throwing up lean-tos and that type of stuff. And I'm searching around the area, finding stuff and finding pieces of metal. And they go, what are you doing? I go, bear alarms.
Yeah.
And Eric is sitting there watching me. And he goes, and I don't know if it was you or Matt, says, where did you learn this stuff? And I said, I was a good Boy Scout growing up, man. I said, I got made it to Eagle Scout. You'd be surprised what I teach you. And so this leads into the story of the wood.
Okay. I'm ready.
So AJ's next name is Woodchuck. we're in there. And so we get set up. We're doing. And so to have an axe in there. I love chopping wood. It's a great stress relief. And so I start whacking away at these things, splitting wood, going to town, having fun. And KJ goes, looks at me, goes, man, you're just having a good time. I said, stress relief. He goes, give me that axe. I can do that. I'm going to that.
I'm young.
Uh-oh.
I know I can do that in one shot, just like you are. I said, really? And he goes, yeah. I said, have you done some splitting the wood? He goes, yeah, looks easy. I said, hand him the axe, have at it. He swings at the thing, thunk. Doesn't swing hard enough, kind of wiggles it out.
He's good. Yeah, gets the axe stuck
in the wood. Okay, all right, it's that game. It's that game.
He's coming from downtown. I mean, he starts with the axe dragging on the ground. He comes up in the full swing.
The full Paul Bunyan.
Yes.
Full Paul Bunyan. I swear to guys, his toes left the ground as he's swinging around. He clips this big log right on the edge of it, and everything went into slow motion. I could see this log going, whoop, whoop. And as it comes up, it hits KJ square into his most
sensitive area, the nether region.
Oh, he instantly, within a half a second, turned blue.
out of the middle of nowhere.
Landed on the ground, curled up in the fetal position, just gasping for air, whining. I mean,
like whimpering. I would say whimpering.
Yeah. It was a center mass hit, huh?
Oh my gosh, dead center.
At this point in time, he could have been injured bad enough to call in a helicopter to air back him out.
Yes.
And so what do me and Matt does? Matt goes, wait a minute, let me get my phone. Let's record it.
Yes. Of course. There is a recording out there somewhere of the aftermath.
And poor KJ's looking up at me like, you know, with these puppy dog eyes, not being able to get a word out. Help. And I go, it's okay to breathe now. It's okay to breathe now.
No, I know what KJ said. He said, Paul, shoot me in the head.
Yes.
But before you do that, delete my browser history.
Oh my gosh. I've never been hit that hard in that region. Like, I mean, it was square. I didn't walk right for 3 days.
Oh yeah. You're having a difficult time the rest of the time. It was brutal. I'm telling you, he went down. I mean, I've never seen
anybody awesome.
Down
so far. Yeah.
And like, he swung so hard, his toes come off the ground.
Yeah.
Oh my god!
I look up and they are just rolling. I wouldn't expect anything else. Like that. That is zero, what they should have done.
Zero sympathy.
No, none.
It's like, man up. We're out hunting here, buddy.
Yeah. And
oh my gosh!
I waddled back to my tent.
So even if you even however the hunt goes, you can always laugh at your friends.
You can. And that's one great thing about hunting is that it's social. It's meant to be shared with others.
Absolutely. Yeah.
And it's memories. I mean, if you're lucky enough and you have a successful hunt, and when you have that mount that you get in there, you know, and I like to go down to, you know, I have a room in my basement where all my African stuff is. And, you know, people call it a trophy room. You know, every once in a while, somebody will come over because I live in Massachusetts and call it the death room.
Sure.
But I tell everybody these are some of my best friends, and they kind of look at me. And I go, every time I look at them, I said, I smile. We talk about the memories we had. Mm-hmm. And I said, and the best part, unlike some of my other friends, they don't argue with me. <That's right. laughs> But every one of them, the reason why you have those mounts, it brings back those memories of the hunt.
The whole trip.
Absolutely.
The whole trip. It's all those little things that happen. You know, it's around the campfire at night. It's once you pull the trigger, it's kind of anticlimactic. You succeed at it, but it's all that stuff leading up to that point. You know, that is the hunt. Yeah. And that's the difference between going out and killing something and the hunt. And building those memories. I mean, I don't regret any one of them that I did. It's because every one of them has a memory that just makes you smile every time you think about it.
Absolutely. Man. So, Paul, thanks for being with us. It's always good to talk to you.
I always enjoy talking to you guys. I mean, it's
fun,
just,
man.
Yeah.
I know that we have to cut it off.
We can literally do this for hours. Yeah.
For hours. And we'll have you back on and do it again.
Absolutely. Well, I mean, if you're looking for KJ stories, I have a few, but we'll just think about that. that.
Yeah, always.
Yes.
I think the audience would love to hear more of those stories.
Please do.
That's awesome.
But yeah, we'll definitely.
Kincaid is an excellent hunter. You know that. I know that. But it just if you're in hunting camp with you, he just makes sure you come back with memories.
Oh, you'll get them.
Awesome. Paul Pluff from Ruger. Thanks for being with us, man. That's it for us. We'll see you next time on Gun Talk Hunt.